to the Outliners. I am your host, Jim Hodgson. I'm super excited today because my guest is Jonathan French. I'll tell you all about him in a second. First of all, you will be listening to this podcast on a Wednesday, if you're keeping up, which you are because you're a fan. Thursday night, if you are in the Atlanta area, I will be hosting a show called Folks to Give in Avondale Town Center. That is in Avondale, Georgia. We will be benefiting care.org, refugees, good folks doing good all over the world. Come on out, have a laugh, you know, give some money, do some good. We're going to have a lot of fun on Thursday night. On Saturday, regular Atlanta Explained show at Village Theater, monthly show I do with those hilarious people. So that's our top of the show read. Now, let's get to our guy. Thanks so much for being here, man.
Ah, man, thanks for the invite. Appreciate
it. I mean, I feel exceedingly lucky to have you because I think in 6 months, you won't be accepting invitations for small-time podcasts.
I don't know. I mean, it's what do you wish for, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to be that guy? I don't know that I want to be that guy in some ways, you know.
At a certain point, you can't avoid it. It's like, yeah. you know, you got a wife, you got a child, you got...
It's already kind of started a little bit, too, so yeah, it's definitely a quickly changing world. I don't know. I guess it'll depend on how quickly I can adapt and figure it all out, but...
Well... Worst problems to have, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. We could all be so lucky. I know.
So, you and I were at Conjuration, I think, is the panel where you and I and Tony Sarecchio were on a panel together.
That's correct. Yes.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a ton of fun. Yeah, I was glad that came together.
And at that panel, you were sort of starting to talk about how Grey Bastards had begun to really get some traction.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but only in so far as readership. I mean, I'd been involved. I'd entered the book in this contest called the Self-Publishing Fantasy Blog Off, or SPIFBO for short, and hashtag SPIFBO is what they've been doing.
And that was the second year.
That was the second year, right. But it goes for an entire year because it takes, you know, it's 300 books entered, and there's only 10 bloggers, and some of those bloggers only are one person. So some of them have staffs and some are one person. So you can imagine,
yeah,
they have 30 books each at the top of the contest, and then they've got to whittle that down to one. And
yeah,
then they all put, yeah, right. I mean, I wouldn't want to do it. And then they all pick a top one of those 30, and then those become the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a while. So in Conjuration, while we were doing the panel with Tony at Conjuration, I was already embroiled in that contest. And I think at that point, maybe I had already made it to the top 10. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it was starting to gain some exposure. And that was the whole point of the contest. The contest has no prize other than...
Well, that's not exactly true.
Well, it has no official prize.
Okay.
Right.
We'll get to the prize.
Right, yeah. It has no stated prize by the contest holder, Mark Lawrence, who is, of course, if you're a fantasy reader, is a really big name, and he's traditionally published with Ace. And so, I mean, his whole thing from the first year and the second year was just exposure, right? There's nothing else.
So you won some nude photos of him.
Right. I did. Yeah. They are succulent.
Kidding, Mark.
No, yeah, we absolutely are. I hope. But at Conjuration, things were starting to pick up, especially among British readers. I was seeing a lot of Kindle sales in the UK.
You'd seen a lot of overseas.
Yeah. They kind of like... Grey Bastards got kind of put into this category, the subgenre of fantasy called Grimdark, which is sort of a specific niche, but it's growing in popularity. And I didn't write it with that intention. I just sort of wrote a book. But in the UK, they're really into that, at least for the moment. And so that gained some traction.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, you find your people and then, hopefully you keep pleasing those people.
Right. Oh, boy. Yeah, they can be vocal if you haven't pleased them.
Yeah.
Well, we should talk about it. If you're listening to this, you already know who he is. But the book is called The Grey Bastards. This is your third?
My third book, but it's not... My other two were part of a series that this is not. This is a departure.
It's its own thing.
Yeah.
I got a just champion-level inscription here I'm going to read, yeah, if you don't mind.
No, please.
To Jim, live in the saddle, die on the hog, and keep selling those fucking books.
Yeah.
It's kind of... that's because I had just shared with you my... readmyfuckingbooks.com URL
And it's brilliant. And I quite frankly think that's the goal for all of us, right?
To find a good URL?
To sell fucking books. I mean, that's, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I really put a foot wrong on that one. I'm sorry. Now, one of the most striking things about the book, if I might just stroke your ego a little bit, is that the cover is so good.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, this is something that authors talk to each other about all the time, is like how key your cover is. And I noticed that your other books, the covers are really nice. And I'm poking around your website and I see that you do a little bit of painting yourself.
For gaming miniatures, right? Like, I don't do any type of like D&D nerd miniatures, like, you know, when you play. Like, that's what I do because I still play.
I think we're all nerds.
Yeah, right. So, you know, at 36 years old, I'm still rolling dice and pretending to be a dwarf, right? But, you know, no, I do. That's like my only kind of artistic thing. But I have a lot of appreciation for art, you know, and so art direction when you're self-published, it's like when you're self-published and you're kind of doing your own thing. Find what your strengths are, because you're going to have tons of weaknesses that you're going to have to shore up. And I always felt like I had a good eye for how I wanted the direction of my books to look. And so I really sought the right people or tried to. And I made some mistakes. I spent a lot of money that ended up getting burnt, you know, and artists did not deliver, or they flaked out, or they just, you know. So, it was a learning curve. But, yeah, so for Grey Bastards, Raymond Swanland, who really is the ego who's being stroked by the beauty of that cover. But he doesn't need that because he's a big name. You know, he's probably the most successful fantasy artist, American born currently, I would say. There's not a franchise that he doesn't have. Star Wars, Halo, Warcraft, whatever. I mean, you just keep going.
We should all be so lucky.
Right. And so of course, book covers. So he was like, I made a list of who do I want for the Grey Bastards cover, and he was number one, and I didn't think he would do it.
But shoot for the stars, right? I mean, why not?
Right. And I actually like completely wussed out. I had a publicist at that time, and I told her that this was the thing, and I was like, but I don't. And she goes, well, let's just email him. And there was this underlying like pussy, like, you know, like, you know, there was, it was kind of like right there, like, why aren't you? Right. And so I said, I don't know. I'm just a self-published guy. He's really big. And she said, well, I'll shoot him an email and it'll give it a little bit more resonance, because it's come from a publicist.
Your people are
contacting. Right, yeah. And so she did. And then he was like, yeah, he sent me some pages. I'll take a look. So we sent him 8 chapters and he read it. And he was like, I really dig it. Can you wait on me? I'm super busy. And we said, we'll absolutely wait. Because the book wasn't even done. So why not?
Right. And then, you sent him all 8 pages you had?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. here it is. I hope you like it. And we waited, and he was astronomically expensive, but you know, you invest in your own future, and you're hoping that you just get it all back, and
it's paying dividends on multiple levels now, right? Because you're not to let the cat out of the bag, but you're getting some attention from Crown. Is that right?
It's signed.
You signed a deal.
Yeah.
So sequel to Grey Bastards definitely going to come, but we got to wait for Grey Bastards to officially come out.
You got to wait for New York's pace.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I mean. That's got to let them do their business.
That's right. Par for the course, right?
But the public is already clamoring for more Grey Bastards.
Yes.
But it's paying dividends in multiple levels because they know that it's a successful property, then you get a little more say for the next cover than you might have had if you just came in out of the woodwork.
Correct. Correct.
Like, so that's got to feel good.
It does. I mean, they're being very, so far, I mean, it's all very new, but they're extraordinarily professional, which you would expect, and much more accommodating to, you know, and treating me more like an equal than I really could have hoped for.
Right? Weird? I mean, I totally know what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the, you know, you hear horror stories, you know, indentured servitude and, you know, and I'm not saying that those are all false. I mean, those horror stories probably exist for a reason. Some of them are probably bullshit, but you know, there's some truth to everything. And,
creative people have been known to be dramatic from time to time.
Yeah. You go figure, right? Yeah. I mean, so, yeah. But it's a continuing learning curve, but it's what you ask for. I mean, when I wrote that book, I told my wife, I said, this is the one that we're going to sell out. If they want it, it was always the intention.
I'm so on board.
Right. I mean, it was just like, you know, because I'm not ashamed of being a self-published guy. I never have been.
Yeah, nor should you be.
But there's I think where a lot of self-published authors kind of lose their way is they don't have a sense of self-awareness. And I kind of realized that my first two books in that series, just you know, they were good, I thought, but I just feel like they didn't have that kind of immediate thing. Like, you know, the Grey Bastards, Sons of Anarchy with half-orcs. That's an immediate thing, right?
That is a great thing to have, a punchy sentence, easily explain it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when we wrote it, it was like, well, I'm taking a departure from my series to write this kind of completely off-the-wall thing that's just nothing but sex and violence, but hopefully has something more to it. And you know, when at first I wrote the first chapter, I didn't think, you know, whatever. But then my wife read it, and I trust her opinion, and she said, this is great. You have something here. You need to go on. And by like four chapters in, she literally said, this is nothing but fucking and fighting, and it's awesome. And she says, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
And so, and that, you know, and I, we, and then once we had that, we just kind of said, all right, we're going to try to stack the deck as much as we can to see if we can get people to come to us. And it's one of these things where when you say that, you're being super confident and you have a game plan. But then when it happens, you wonder, did you ever really believe it? Like, did it?
No.
Yeah, but we had a plan, and we've been fortunate, and that plan has now worked.
Yeah. Well, I'm pleased. Like I say, I think that, you know, as this podcast goes on, we'll be lucky to get people who are, you know, rising folks. We'll be able to point to this, you know, you're our first live, well, I made Megan be a guest on the podcast as she was baking cookies a couple weeks ago. So, but you're our first live purpose author.
But it happens the other way. If I can encourage you with this, Grim Tidings podcast, which is Rob Matheny's podcast, and he does nothing but grim dark fantasy fiction. And back when Grey Bastards first came out, he wanted me on. So we like literally had the thing almost scheduled. And then their podcast exploded.
Uh-oh.
And they were getting huge names in the business, like authors on. And so I got bumped and have still not been on.
Oh, that's poopy. No,
but now that I won Spiffbo, he wants me back on. And of course I gave him like mountains of shit for it. But of course it's all in good fun. But it you know, to be fair, it could go the other way.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're
hey.
Well, I haven't mentioned this yet, and I should. You can be found at jonathanfrenchbooks.com.
Yes.
On Twitter at jfrenchauthor.
Yes.
And you spell Jonathan without an H.
Correct.
People who put an H in are fools.
I mean, you know, I try to be.
You don't have to go on record.
Yeah. Well, I will say if I had a rapper name, it would be LaJonashon. So, I mean,
I love it.
You know, I mean, it's kind of however you want to go, you know.
So Jonathan.
Yeah.
French books. And I'm sure you can be easily Googled. You're all over the Googles.
Yeah. It used to be a realtor in Washington was the top result if you Googled Jonathan French, and I kicked his ass to the curb now. So that's fun. Yeah.
Man, I've been after Hodgson.com since 1997. Somebody in Canada registered it before me when domains were still free.
Right.
This is like forever ago.
Damn.
And they've just been they do nothing with it. They've been sitting on it.
Those Canucks.
I want an apology. Damn it.
Yeah, that's right. At least.
Well, if I didn't explain it properly, this podcast is called The Outliners.
Mm-hmm.
So what we try to do is I'm inspired by Paul F. Tompkins' podcast, Spontanea Nation, and what they're improvisers. And what they do is they take a topic for improvisation from the previous podcast, and it comes forward and they have a free form improvisation. So what I'm hoping, my plan with this podcast is sort of to promote the idea that it's not so much the idea for a novel, but the execution, you know? I mean, if it viewed at sufficient remove, ideas are very similar,
sure.
You know? I mean, it's like you say, it's fighting and fucking and, I mean,
yep.
It's, but, you know, we all have our favorites that are that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they're, I don't know. George Martin seems to be selling books.
Yeah, I mean.
When he puts them out.
That's what I say. I mean, if you can sell them after you take a better part of a decade to write them, I mean, you know.
Yeah. So what we're going to try to do is come up with an outline for a novel. You know, and look, we don't have to write this book, but
who knows, right?
But because you are sort of the tip of the spear in terms of authors being on the podcast, at the end, I'll get a suggestion for you from whoever the next person is, possibly Tony Sarecki, although it's like his buying temperature for being on the podcast was high when I was talking to him about it at first, but then a couple days later, he was like, I'm kind of busy. Maybe, I don't know. You know, so maybe we'll be able to warm him back up after you have a good experience.
Yeah.
So because I didn't have an author on for the last episode, I reached out to my friends at the Writer Chat IRC channel, where I've been known to hang out. That's on SnooNet if you guys want to come by. There are lots of authors there. You won't have to talk to me. Trust me. You can talk to people who actually know what they're talking about. But here's what they said. I was like, guys, French is coming over. We're going to try to do an outline. What should our outline be about? Here's what they said. Cave bugs.
Cave bugs.
Now, cave bugs come from the game RuneScape.
Okay.
Which I'm not familiar with it at all, but it seems to be having a great surge. And it's like a, it's an old game. It's like a three quarters top down. And it looks at least 10 years old in terms of the graphics. So I'm sorry to any RuneScape fans. I'm not familiar with it, but here's what a cave bug is. Cave bugs are monsters that require level 7 Slayer to kill. They are found in the Lumbridge Swamp Caves, and stronger variants can be located in the Dorgesh Khan South Dungeon. They are a good source of low-level herbs, which can aid beginning players in training Herblore. They're just bugs that live in caves.
But herb-loving bugs.
But well,
which,
you know,
tells me something about them already.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's funny. That's the thing. It's like, you know, when you kill something in a dungeon, for example, a zombie that drops 3 gold pieces, where were those gold pieces?
Right. Which, and I know you're a fellow Futurama fan. And of course, they did a whole, you know, not even an episode. I think it was one of the movies. And it was something about the horse. They killed the horse and it was like, had its rump sack or something. It's like, where, you know, they looted the rump sack. Like, you know, like, where right. The, yeah. Right. That is sort of
a like weird... before you came along, the zombie is walking back and forth in a dungeon and he's just like holding these 3 coins in his hand.
Right. Well, and I'm old school, right? Like, I still play on the table with people. Right. And I play some video games too, but, you know, and it's amazing how that thinking still permeates. Like, you, they'll literally kill like a giant spider and they're like, let's loot it. What did it have? I'm like, it's
legs.
A big ass spider. Like, what do you like? It was wearing a crown and some boots. What do you want? Like, it's, I don't know.
Okay, so a novel about cave bugs. Now, here's there's a further suggestion, which is that the cave bugs are trying to create their own language, or they're close to creating their own language. I don't know that we got to go that far, but let's see if we can sort of think of a beginning of a novel.
So these are definitely our protagonists, these cave bugs.
They're think so.
Okay, so because if the idea is they are creating their own language, if whether we use that or not, that is putting them at front and center. Mm-hmm. These are not you know, villains or something. We have this is about them and their existence. Yeah,
I like that a little bit better, just because I feel like using them as a villain has already been done by
sure,
the game
absolutely.
Where we know them from.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I'm thinking like, I don't know, cave bug semaphore. I mean, if they're trying to create their own language. You know, got a lot of legs, you could definitely...
Ooh, that's a good point.
You could definitely...
Really complex.
You could be waving some flags around. I mean, there's the whole, you know, the chittering, like they just strike mandibles or legs together and make some kind of Morse code type, but that's probably a little on the nose.
That is a terrifying word, chittering, to me.
Yeah, it's kind of
like that, just the noises that bugs make.
That whole predator thing, that just weird back of the God. Click of the throat. Yeah,
always with the clicking.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's if they were to be able to speak to one another, if that would be a problem. You know, if somehow in their world, like, there's like a lit RPG angle there, like they're,
right.
Perhaps if they were able to speak to one another, they'd be able to warn one another when adventurers are coming through the cave, and that would be problematic for, the game masters, whoever they are.
I'm sure. I mean, especially if it has some kind of, like, you know, the beacons are lit kind of thing, where if they are doing semaphore, they could go over just like insane distances.
Right.
Good luck, right? I mean, you see them coming for for miles.
That's really a good idea for a language, because I think those clicks could go a long way in a cave.
There, see? There you go. There's a resonance factor.
Uh-huh.
That's nice. Hide the herbs. Hide the good shit.
Are you guys holding?
Yeah.
If you're holding, here comes the man.
It's the adventurers. Yeah. I mean, but that raises an interesting point, though. Is writing a book is how do you portray dialogue, right? Or do you, right? I mean, so if you're dealing with bugs, this was kind of my thing. I read a mermaid book, like a mermaid fantasy book one time. Mm-hmm. And there was some conceptual, right? Yeah, there was some conceptually good stuff. But there was also some stuff that just seemed to be totally ignored. Like, how is, they're just talking, right? And there was, how is that happening underwater? Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? And then there was a ton of fighting, and it was like, okay, is this like an Aquaman thing where everyone is super strong so they don't worry about resistance? But it was just things weren't addressed. And then so it's like, do you just assume that because you are following this culture that they're just taking it all for granted, so therefore you as the reader have to take it for granted? But seriously, like, speaking with a tongue. And we're not talking about whale song or dolphin call or anything. We're talking like people with mermaids, so they had human faces,
right,
talking underwater, which to me would just sound like my son on his swimming lesson trying to blow bubbles, right? I mean, it just would come off like so. Right. So
you don't know what you just said in mermaid.
Right, exactly. So if you apply that, if you kind of take that into bug language, would you just write out dialogue as normal and then just assume that the reader understands that it's really...
I feel, as you're describing this to me, my thought is, this is a book that failed to grab Jonathan at a story level, and as a result, his mind is wandering as he's reading it.
And thinking.
And thinking, how the hell are these fish people talking to one another?
Okay. So we have to grab them at a story level so that they don't even worry about it.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
that's fair.
Yeah, because I feel like, I don't know. At a certain level, every story is going to ask you to, you know, suspend your disbelief. You're going to have to make some leaps.
That's true.
And the better the story is, the more organized it is, mm-hmm. I guess, so the easier it is to ingest, then you don't have to, you know.
So, yeah. So, I mean, ganja growing bugs... is, you know, I think at a story level is, you know, not bad. who are trying to come up with an early warning system. Mm-hmm. Because they keep getting pillaged. Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of so I'm trying to get to our inciting incident, you know. Mm-hmm. Is it, does one of the bugs come up with the ability to speak in some new way? I'm thinking, can the cave bugs now understand the adventurers and what the adventurers are saying? And is that how they realize that they're evil, or they're villains in the game, or that they're in a game?
Right. No, that's actually, I mean, you know,
that's the lit RPG angle.
Yeah.
And that's,
well, and is like you say, the special, like the main protagonist, is that the whole thing? He's this enlightened one who suddenly, it's now no longer gibberish when the wizard and the dwarf and the elf are in the cave, like talk. He has this moment where he translates it and it becomes sensical to him. Like, and then,
I kind of like that.
Yeah. And then he's not only a translator, is he kind of like a prophet at this point? Because, oh wait, you know, they just see us as animals.
Yeah. I kind of like that. I like, okay. So maybe we have a bug, if you're amenable. So cave bug can understand humans or adventurers, we'll call them, because they might not be human.
Could be anything.
And I like how this is so often handled by, oh, well, they speak the common tongue. Like,
right.
They all, you know.
Yeah.
That's something that you see a lot.
Right, yeah, tons, like all the time.
Because how else do you handle that?
I mean, well, not to... toot my own horn.
toot away, buddy.
You don't. I mean, you do what is true, and that is that different people speak different languages, and maybe, I mean, I guess if you applied that to current world, you know, contemporary era, English could be considered common because it's the mm-hmm. common business language at this point and mm-hmm. has been for a long time. So I guess it's not totally off the wall, but it just seems a little bit, I don't know, it seems a little bit... just lazy in how you say that, right? Oh, I'm just going to use this because everyone else has. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, like Grey Bastards, there is, you know, Hisparthan, and then there is, you know, other, every culture has its own language, and then it's just, okay, what is most spoken, right? Okay, Hisparthan is most spoken, so therefore it's common, but don't ever refer to it as that, right?
Yeah, capital C common.
Right. I mean, that's just a little bit, so if you're able to just establish in a world-building way that there is sort of a dominant in the region, there is a dominant, you know, tongue spoken, then you just name that like calling it English or calling it a sparkling.
That's true to life.
Yeah, that's true to life. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you know, you when you're down in Mexico and you're trying to get by, you don't say, I don't speak the common tongue, right? I mean, you say, my Spanish sucks.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, my Spanish is terrible. So, I mean, and again, you don't, hopefully you don't say, my Mexican is terrible, right? I mean, there's a name for the damn language. Yeah. So I think that's what you need to do in fantasy and quit. I mean, I know lit RPG people might find that just deplorable and throw the book down, but.
Who knows what they're doing? Yeah. All right, so a cave bug can now understand adventurers. I'm thinking, and when I think about that, I think that I feel like there could be a moment where an adventurer is about to, and this is a low-level adventurer just grinding away at the beginning of the game, I believe.
Right, yeah.
And is about to strike this one bug, and there's a, like, no, don't kill me sort of a moment. Mm-hmm. And the adventurer is like, you're not supposed to be able to talk to me, cave bug. What?
Right.
You know, what the hell's happening?
Or even take it a step further is that there is some sort of, I mean, I don't, again, and I, sorry, RuneScape fans, I don't know it either, but, which is amazing because I know a lot about dumb, you know, fantasy stuff. But I would assume probably that mostly in fantasy games, herbs tend to be healing items. It's usually the way it goes. So maybe we've got a thing where, the cave bug's enlightened moment comes from the fact that he gets injured trying to take the herb away, right? Like the adventurers show up, they roll in, they start slaying to grind, to take, to loot. And the cave bug, his whole point is not to even fight back. It's just to like, he's like a shuttle monkey, right? Like get the herb into the deeper cave. And then he gets hurt by this low level adventurer and maybe hurts the adventurer back in turn. And then we have some kind of cross pollinization where it's like, they both kind of get healed by the same herb at the same time. And then therefore,
they become the Cheech and Chong of RuneScape.
And there's like a, there's this like avatar moment where instead of like hooking up to
I like that.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's.
Yeah, I like it.
That's a little on the nose, but.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, look, we're not, we don't have to write this book. We just have to come up with the outline.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah. What have I got?
You might get an email.
Remember that cave bug thing?
you might get an email next after this airs. People are like, oh, we're really into it.
We'll knock it out, buddy. We'll knock it out. I kind of like the idea of, I like that working together, former enemies sort of working together kind of thing. And maybe where we're trying to get to with the cave bugs is their whole thing is, look, you don't have to kill us. We're happy to share some of this herb with you. You know.
Right.
Maybe you don't need to kill us all the time. We could just give it to you.
there's an economy here that could work, right?
Yeah, the problem with that, I think the problem with that is the adventurers are like, well, yeah, but it's not just the herb. We also need the experience.
Right. Yes. That's the whole thing. Because it's like doing reps, right? In order to get stronger.
Cave bug and... Okay, who are we joining forces? Who is our antagonist?
You know, I always kind of like the little guy. I like to throw back. You know, I always like it to be the one no one sees coming. And you know, I know we can't use hobbits because we'll get sued, but I always kind of like the little stumpy short guy who no one cares about and underestimates. And that can be a new creation, or we can just make him, you know.
I like that.
You know,
this is our adventurer is a stumpy guy. I like that a lot.
I think, I mean,
have you read Drew Hayes' NPCs?
Mm-mm.
He's got his like main, one of his main characters is a stumpy guy like you're talking about. I'm going to cut that out because.
No, I mean, I think it's apropos. I mean,
small adventurer, comma. Stumpy guy.
I mean, again, if you say hobbit, you get sued. So,
right.
You got to come up with your own kind of version. And yeah, just like the common tongue, people use halfling a lot, like I did.
Come after me, JRR.
Yeah.
Bring it.
Saul Zance or whoever owns him now. But it doesn't, I mean, that can even be interesting. I mean, you know, that actually comes up with a thing because you brought out Martin earlier, And that brings up this weird thing with just the word dwarf, right? Because there's dwarfism, right? Mm. Which is what Tyrion Lannister is. So when George Martin is writing a Game of Thrones book and he uses the word dwarf, then he is talking about a genetic human condition, mm-hmm. right? In a medieval setting. Mm-hmm. But the moment you have anything else in play, so like for my book, the moment you throw in an elf or a centaur or a halfling, along that term completely morphs.
That's interesting.
Changes and mm-hmm. becomes the bearded grumpy guy who lives underground and right. and likes axes, right?
And my axe.
Right. I mean, instantly. So like you have to keep your series almost completely human-centric, or in fact, human-centric in order for the word dwarf to just mean a little person.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah.
And so
I never thought about that.
It's annoying because when you're dealt with that issue, which forced me to use the term halfling when I wrote my book, because I wanted to just have them be, you know, people with dwarfism, mm-hmm. right? And I couldn't do that because the moment you start using that term in a book with half orcs, it's a different thing. So that's
you just happen to have a beard. You just happen to live under a mountain,
right? I mean, it's
in the mind, but none of that. Just forget about all that.
Yeah. And so it's these kind of nomenclature things that come up. When you're writing fantasy, and especially like this, I mean, so it's like you know that's why you throw out dumb things like Stumpy Guy because you don't yet have to lock down,
right,
like that sort of parlance. But anyway, I don't know.
Okay, I love it. I never thought about that way.
Yeah, that's I mean that and it also seems like a really good edit for you. Just cut that out.
We're gonna end up with no podcast. Okay, so who is against whom are we struggling?
Well, we have definitely marauding adventurers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now we have this character who was once one of them.
Oh, okay.
And I gotta now like it. Stumpy Guy, who was once part of these adventuring party,
mm-hmm.
the maligned, considered useless one.
Oh, I love this.
And then...
So are we talking about like a pack of like big, strong, cool guys type of thing?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we could totally, we could make this, you know, group of hard men kind of thing, you know, and, you know, again, Stumpy might not mean hobbit or halfling. He might just be the runt.
Just Stumpy.
Yeah. Or yeah, they just call him that because he had a bad wood cutting accident, you know,
yeah. Like, cut himself off at both legs. What a terrible, how did he manage it?
And now he's the guy on a, you know, little cart sled with the,
you know, the I have no legs.
pushing himself along with two blocks in his hand.
Stumpy and Cave Bug struggle against cool guys. And I'm thinking, you know, in terms of like big, like strong, established warriors.
Yeah.
And those guys refuse to recognize that the cave bugs are sentient.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm speaking for you here, but they hear this language, but they discount that it's really a language.
They're like you. They see it as creepy chittering.
Right.
That's a total bias.
Well, I think it probably is creepy chittering, but
yes.
But Stumpy is able to I understand it, perceive it.
Yeah, I would say it through accident or design.
Right.
Gets this newfound ability.
And so that sets us up for this. Now we got our story arc, basically. We kind of know where we're going.
And, you know, especially when you're doing with a bunch of adventurers, his comrades are like bros. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. if they're, like you say, just all about the...
Yeah, if I were writing this, they would be like the cast of the Jersey Shore.
Yeah. true adventurers skip leg day, right? I mean, that is the...
I'm writing that down
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Do you even adventure, bro?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's...
Love it. Okay, so we'll need... let's design our final showdown. Let's think about how we get there.
Mm.
So we've got Stumpy, and I'm thinking, in my mind, I'm thinking because Stumpy's got, now has contact with the cave bugs, And there've got to be heaps of them, you know.
Oh, sure.
Because at the beginning of the game, they, whatever you're killing at the beginning of the game, they repop quickly because otherwise, how are you going to get all these noobs through to the middle levels?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and then later in the game, you got to wait for whoever to respawn 12 mm-hmm. hours. Well, yeah. Somebody killed him 12 hours ago, so.
Oh, yeah. Another bro.
Freaking bro.
Yeah. So.
Always killing all the good bosses with the good drops. So, Stumpy, I'm thinking Stumpy and the cave bugs are able to coordinate an army of mobs
mm-hmm.
to fight against the cool guys.
Yeah, we could even like network him in like alien style, where instead of like the hive queen, it's Stumpy.
I like this.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Because who cares if you've got no legs, if you're floating in like a mucus membrane and psychically connected to
right.
a horde of, you know, Starship Trooper style.
Yeah.
That I mean,
I'm also imagining the giant face from Dune.
Yes.
The spice.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's, see, he, you go from him being kind of like lame to all powerful and horrifying. But the trick is to still make him likable. That's the hard part as the writer.
Is to make Stumpy likable?
Yeah, once he's an all powerful bug king.
Mm-hmm.
I think then that's tricky.
The all powerful bug king. Just checking to make sure the recorder's recording, and it is. We've done well. So I can imagine some moments with our cool guys where they're saying to one another, you know, I've been out in the hinterlands, and
good use of hinterlands. I like that. Nice, well done.
And these mobs are coordinating in a way that I've never seen them coordinate, and it's starting to freak me out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the head cool guy is like, "What is the matter with you? We are warriors. We kill these things all the time. That is our deal.
That's right.
How can you possibly be afraid of these?" And the other guys are like, "I don't know, man. They're getting pretty smart out there. Forget it. We're gonna have a purge. We're gonna go into the cave. That's obviously where the problem is. This Stumpy thing and these cave bugs are the genesis and the nexus of whatever this problem is. We're gonna wipe them all out."
Right.
And so that's an end. Stumpy and the cave bug know that that is coming, so they gather all the other mobs, and maybe there's a giant battle. And I'm thinking that we need to have had these giant battles before,
mm-hmm.
but the cool guys always win because they're the cool guys. But
yeah.
This time, because we have communication and tactics, maybe Stumpy's got a copy of The Art of War.
I mean, I think on his push cart. Yeah, I think that tracks.
So the cool guys are like, it doesn't matter if they're talking to one another.
Yeah.
We are the cool guys.
Or, you know, Stumpy having been part of them at one point, he doesn't even necessarily need Art of War because he's already been a part of Bro Code
mm-hmm.
Guild of Slayers and knows that, you know, they don't do cardio. you know, I mean, that's all the bugs really need is that knowledge right there. You know?
God, that's funny.
Yeah.
It's like a Genghis Khan, you know, like a Huns sort of a tactic.
Yeah, they won't survive a war of attrition. So that's
I love it.
That's all we got to do.
Yeah.
It, you know.
And that style of warfare just requires communication.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And when you're a hive mind, mm-hmm. all powerful bug king, you don't.
And
the tagline, you know, he went in with no legs. He emerged with a million.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Oh.
Yeah. I mean.
Oh, that is it.
That's it right there.
Subtitle.
So that's it.
Oh, my God.
We'll be waiting on Tor's email. Bane. We'll be waiting on Bane's email. This is a Bane book.
God, that's perfect.
Don't skip leg day. Make it leg life.
Look, you know? We only need one amazing tagline.
That's the title of the book is like
Don't Skip Leg Day.
It's gotta be. Not Day of the Leg. Day of the Legs.
Day of the Leg.
Day of the Legs. That's it.
Oh, it's beautiful. I feel like I want to say that there's a moment where, you know, Stumpy is, he's training the cave bugs and they're speaking to, and they're coordinating this guerrilla style attack, and it's problematic for him. And we get, you know, like in Cool Runnings when the guys from the islands are learning to bobsled.
Yes.
It's foreign to them, but they're getting it.
Absolutely.
You know?
I already love it.
And somebody runs in and they're like, bad news. The cool guys have reached out to powerful wizard or whoever, you know, so there's this extra level of danger.
Yeah. Got to bring in the outside, the contract man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody who's like crazy powerful and who is, we've fought him before and he slays everybody. I mean, it's just, all he's got to do is wave his hands and we all are, we perish.
That glass cannon guy. It's like, he's not all that jacked up, but man, he can,
can sure lay him down.
Yeah.
So we have our final battle and the battle's got to hinge on this one thing that they have, which is communication, you know, their ability to understand other beings, even though they look different.
Right.
You know, and maybe like a cave bug saves one of the higher ranking cool guys, something like that.
Well, I think your contract, your all powerful nuker guy, spell slinging guy, has to kind of take it too far, right? I mean, if you're the nuclear option character, then you need to like own that. So, I think maybe he goes even further than Bro Guild. So it's almost like you've got a reversal there, right?
So like he's too evil, and so,
or he's just too zealous about turning everything into glass, you know. So then you've got the bros bring this guy in, and then he starts going. It's like, oh no, this is gonna get rid of everything, but it's also gonna get rid of everything, right? Then there'll be no herb, right? You know. So what is it worth all the experience if we get no treasure, kind of thing?
I like it.
I don't know. That's
no, I'm with it.
But then you get like, instead of the kind of on the, I mean, Battle of Five Armies is brilliant, but it's also like, you know what you're getting into, right? So at least thank provides
God. That's where I want to be.
Right, well, but this provides some sort of twist. Like, at least we have that moment where, you know, that kind of gods and monsters moment where you bring in this kind of cool outsider Boba Fett style character who's gonna solve everything. But the problem is that his solution is too far. So now you've got, okay, do we all just turn on him? Kind of deal, or is it going to take Bugs and Bros?
I like that.
To Bugs take out Bros. To take
that could be the series name.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, Day of the Legs, Bugs and Bros, Book One. I mean, maybe,
you know, I this is like, for me, this is like the A team putting a cigar in my mouth. I love it when a plan comes together. Type of moment.
We just need a montage. That's it.
Oh, it's so good. Okay, so yeah, I like that a lot. And the cool guys have to admit at the end that they can understand the cave bugs and Stumpy, maybe through Stumpy, but they have to admit that the language is understandable because they need that communication in order to defeat the horrible nuclear option that they brought in.
Right. Exactly.
We got to join together.
Mm-hmm.
God. So good.
It's, I mean, I it's got legs.
Oh.
Duh, dude. Yeah, dude.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Throw a flag.
Yeah, really.
Okay. Now, the only thing we need, and we've come up with a bunch, just to put a button on it, we need a title.
I feel like that's for Bane to decide.
By the way, it would be a great moment for me in the life of this podcast if somebody wrote one of the books that we came up with. I would love that.
Yeah. No, it'll happen.
One of the points I made in the first ever like statement of purpose episode is like, you know, it's all about the execution. If everybody who ever listened to this took one of our ideas and everybody wrote a book, the books would all be different. So,
oh, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's I have a dream. I have a dream of doing that. Like I actually have my guys picked. I would love to. I'll say this right now, whether this makes it or not. I would love to submit a story idea and get with both Joe Abercrombie and Jesse Bullington and have all three of us write the same story. I just know who I'd want to pit myself against, right? Because mm-hmm. and just see how it would turn out.
But, that would be a really cool thing.
Yeah, I kind of actually thought about the logistics of it, and I realized that you know I don't know that traditional would know how to make money off of it, so they would kind of flee from it, right?
I'm not sure they know how to make money. Full stop.
Well, on a personal note, I hope that's not true, yeah, but we'll see. But to your other point, I mean, how many times have you listened to something or watched a movie or an episode of a TV show that you like and just gone, I could have done this so much better. There's somebody doing that right now. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, these hacks,
these idiots, they
missed the there was golden opportunity when all these ideas and I know RuneScape better and here's all this and that's
please.
Great. No, but that's great. I mean, because that's what
get at us on Twitter. We're happy to
amen.
Withstand your slings and arrows.
Because distance provides that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I this one kid thought I was at a con. I was just at thought I was shoveling him a heap of shit, and I wasn't because I told him, I said, look, I speak to everybody that I meet as if they're a better writer than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I just assume it. And it's not because of low self-esteem or anything, but what is the other alternative? Or the other option is to assume that what? You're
is
better.
To be a know-it-all, right?
Yeah, is to be. That's not going to work. I mean, so, you know, as far as I know, you've got mad skills and just haven't quite hit that stride or haven't quite, you know, you're just, mm-hmm. I'm just a little bit farther down the path, but it doesn't mean that you're not way more prepared. And so yeah, I have a feeling that you keep doing this, if not, you know, day of the legs, it'll be something will, somebody will eventually do it.
I would be so pleased.
I'll probably listen to this after it comes out and go, God, there's all the good ideas,
right?
You know? so,
well, let's consider it a living document, you know,
we can
update it anytime.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I love that. I think that's a great attitude. I try to have the same sort of, student, the mind of a student, you know, just, you never finish learning. If you ever think you're done learning, you're
yeah. I mean,
a turd in the punch
absolutely.
Bowl.
Absolutely. I mean, and I won't name names, but I mean, you've been around. You do cons, like you've met them, and they can be big names. They can be up and coming names. And as soon as you hit that, it's just like, oh God.
Yeah, I'm really? Thinking specifically of the one panel I've done at Dragon Con. I was on a panel with a guy that had that attitude, and it's just like, why? Why?
Yeah. And the only thing I can think of is again, it's just, it's low self-esteem. It's like, it's somehow either you have the success, but somehow never found the self-confidence, or you don't have it. And so in order to shore it up, but either one of those two types, I think the former is almost worse. The guys who, you know, I was on a panel with one weekend with a big name. And the first panel we did together, they were great. And I'll even use they to keep it gender neutral. The second panel, they wouldn't even sit next to me. They took their chair like to the other side of off the table to the end. So they
sat. If there's anything that helps when you're both on microphones, it's being a few more feet away.
But it was just like, oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing what you see, but no, I mean, for all those listening, like don't be that way.
I'm just thinking, you know, as the panel was going on, I'm thinking, you know what? There is a kid here listening to us speak right now who has everything they need to blow all of our minds. And that person is a fan of you being a blowhard, and it's
yep.
And that kid's dreams are like, you know, they're deciding to go in some other direction because they're hearing what a jackball you are.
Yeah,
and I'm like I want to read that kid's book, you know,
right?
That
absolutely.
They need to grow. We're all going to learn from them.
Well, and we met you and I met at JordanCon a couple years back. I don't know. Did you sit on a panel at all with Brandon Sanderson while you were there?
I've never paneled with Sando.
Okay.
I have pretended to be him in books.
Yeah, right. All right. Yeah, exactly.
Because I want people to sign
buy
my books.
I mean, I had one with him, and it was a big panel. I think there were like four or five of us. And of course, everyone is aware in the audience, on the table, that it's his con, right? I mean, it's his con.
Yeah.
And he doesn't come every year. So this was a big year that he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he never made me feel that way. And could have easily made me feel like I did not need to be on the panel.
Well, he's got a million series and they're all successful. So,
yeah, but I mean, but some people have that and still don't, you know, he remembered my name. He, every time I would make a point, if he thought so, I agree with Jonathan's point. Like, and it was just kind of, And I thought, see, right? I mean, this...
Mastery.
Well, and then you'd think, is it really all that hard? But then you see the other side of it, and you think, and it rears its head more than you would hope. But...
Struggles.
Yeah. And so if I, you know, if in 5 years we'll make a pact, if you're that way or I'm that way, then we got to...
Well, let me tell you something, buddy. It's going to be me. You're going to have to come to my ivory tower and ascend the steps in order to assault me. Okay, so we've got to come up with this title. Day of the Leg, I like. But, and I love the tagline, he went in with no legs and came out with a million. True adventurer skip leg day.
Yeah.
Cave of the Leg.
Yeah.
Legscape.
That's, oh man.
This is one of those things that, like, you kind of have to, a lot of times, well, sometimes a title just comes to you and it feels so good. And other times I feel like you want to sort of simmer on it.
Yeah, well, and that's also called stalling for creative time.
it is.
Look, caveward Stumpy. If I can,
you can never go cave again.
I feel like there's something. I had something and it just left me. I had because I wanted to try to get off the leg thing a little bit, if possible.
I think it's possible.
And deal with the communication, the language issue. I had something with chitter in it, and it's leaving me. Which I know would just, you know, and it's instead of the sound and the fury, you know, we need like, we need the stump and the chitter, or the
stump and the chitter. We could just do chittering.
Or just chitter.
Chitter. Yeah, I like, you got to be chitting me. I like chitter. Simple. We'll put a pin in it for now. If we come up with a better one.
I think that has mass market appeal, though.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I could see us on the fiction, just the literature shelf.
Mm-hmm. Face out, too, because we'd be big deals.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so here's what happens in this story.
I'm down.
Our adventurer, picture him, Stumpy. He's not a big guy. I think in Act One we begin with him among the cool guys, so we can see him being, you know, abused and maligned by them.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes that in order to sort of stop this abuse and be seen as an equal, he needs to level up.
That's right.
He needs to gain experience. He needs to work on his herb lore, which means he's got to go in this cave and get these herbs from these bugs. So he goes into the cave. Lo and behold, he goes to kill a couple of these things. And one of them, he understands what one of them is saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it stops him. And then he goes back to the cool guys and he says, listen, these things are talking. And they're saying, stop stabbing me. So... cast out from the cool guys at this point, I'm thinking maybe. What do you think?
Do they care enough about him to cast him out?
That's a good point.
You know, like, it's almost like they value.
That's worse, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're so insignificant that they don't bother to...
You're just neglected.
They don't even bother to run you out of town.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the whole...
great point.
This whole Count of Monte Cristo thing, like, neglect is our greatest, you know.
He is... rising in popularity and influence among the bugs,
because
he's able to communicate with them, and they prevail. Maybe the bugs prevail upon him to go back to the cool guys and say, "Hey, listen, these things can talk. They're sentient. They speak to one another," and then this it sets up this final battle between the cool guys and the things, and then we have that moment where one of the sort of second or third rank cool guys says to the main cool guy, something's happening. They're talking to one another. We're kind of getting our butts kicked out there. This could be a problem. We got this big battle coming up. Maybe like a raid and WoW.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
It's something they're planning to do together, you know. And then so they say, well, look, it's not going to be a problem. We'll call in this nuclear option. whatever the nuclear option is. Are you sure that's a good idea? I don't think, you know, last time we called in Leroy Jenkins, it was a bit of bit of a goat rope. And then we get to the big battle, and I think we see how effective the communication and the guerrilla tactics of the cave bugs are.
Mm-hmm.
But then the nuclear option arrives, and everybody takes damage.
Yeah.
And
guy doesn't know how to rein it in at all.
And the cool guys realize what an error they've made, what fools they've been, and Stumpy and the cave bugs and the cool guys join forces to defeat the nuclear option.
Right. Which ends up, you know, like being the boss fight.
Yeah. Badass. Super badass. And at the end, everybody's together. You know, I almost said things are really clicking, but that...
Oh, there it is. There it is. You know, you need to have one of the characters say that at the end and like break the fourth wall when he does it.
Oh, that would be shameful of us, which means...
It must happen.
I'm on board.
Yeah, right. No, but yeah, against the nuclear option, you'd have, you know, bros riding bugs, because that's all, you know.
Oh, cool. God, yeah. Yes. You know what I mean? Yes.
Because you got to swarm him. And you know, if you've got
get on my back.
Yeah, if you've got bugs, which are mobs, and then you've got these, like, bros, which are, you know, kind of these burst damage dudes. But wizard nuclear option, the reason why he's so uncontrollable is he has really... He's that guy that has nothing else to gain. He's the guy that's gotten all the way to end game content. He's got every item he wants. He's at level cap.
Mm-hmm.
So he just likes to go in and click the button and kill everything, right?
Right.
That's like the only thing that's fun anymore.
Because he put in all that time getting all that sweet gear, and his life has no other real meaning for him.
Yeah, you wonder why he's even still playing, right? I mean, it's kind of like,
yeah, why would you?
But they do, and he does. So
yeah. Well, they raise the level cap every couple of years, right?
But you have to keep playing for those years for some reason.
Yeah.
Man, this is such a marketable book.
I mean,
if I might toot our horns.
Yeah, well, we got to thank the people that gave you the idea, I think.
Yeah, thank you to the writer chat, IRC channel on SnooNet. Come on by, talk to some good authors. You won't have to speak to me, I promise. You can find Jonathan French at JonathanFrenchBooks.com, on Twitter, JFrenchAuthor. This has gone so well, man. Thank you so much.
This is a blast. No, I appreciate it.
Grey Bastards is the book. Can people get it right now?
Yeah, till June 1st. So by the time you get this out, you better hurry.
Yeah, you basically got a week.
Yeah, because June 1st, I got to bring my indie edition down, and then it'll be gone for a year, and then Crown will bring theirs out.
And you can say that you were... I don't know if the timing works out on this, but if people go to your website, they can do a signed copy, right?
Well, probably by the time this airs, they won't be able to, because my stock is basically gone.
Right.
So I would say...
Struggles of a popular author, buddy.
Well, you know, yeah, it happened really fast. I mean, there was when that hit, people wanted that sign. Collectors, I guess. Just,
as they should, yeah.
Yeah.
I cherish mine. And the thing about this book is you're getting a big book. It's not a... This is not a NaNoWriMo type of thing. I mean, it's got to be 200,000.
That's because I don't know how to edit. That's because I just bloat the shit out of everything.
I don't know. I was just thinking before you got here, I'm flipping through pages, and, you know, every page I come to, I see some stuff that is interesting. I mean, you know.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be able to do that again.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing better than a book that really grabs you, but not only grabs you, but there's a lot to be grabbed by. You know, you don't feel like... I mean, I'm trying to put books out really regularly, very quickly.
It's so tough.
And, you know, it's really an achievement, man. And I'm glad to see that you're seeing the rewards.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just glad that I can learn now this other side of the fence and kind of be that guy who can represent both sides. Cause I mean, I'm not unique. There are people that can do it, but even though the stigmas and the lines are blurring, the whole self-published versus traditionally published thing is still kind of a debated hot topic. And it's really kind of been nice to sort of look and say, okay, well, here's where I probably had it wrong back in the day. And here's where some of these people have got it wrong here. And maybe I can moderate it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I foresee a lot of panels where that's what I'll be doing.
I'm glad that I've got a traditionally published book and I went through that process. I did not love it. I much prefer what I'm doing now, which is I get to pick the art. I get to put these things out quickly. Mm-hmm. I can more quickly respond to market, even though I really don't really write to market.
Yeah.
Cause
yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, the thing, right now it's kind of easy cause it's so new for me. So in a year or 2 years, who knows what I'll say. Mm-hmm. But it just the you know, it's easy to be kind of blinded by the upfront advance and, oh, it's such a lot of money and it's, you know, it, and it's life changing and, you know, and it's great. And I'm not, and then at the end of the day, I think what I realized is there's such a difference in just pay structure, right? I mean, there's such a difference. Mm-hmm. And not to go into all that boring stuff, but if you're self-publishing your book, you're able to look at what you're earning in real time and you're going to mm-hmm. get that check in at most 3 months, if not instantaneously, depending on who, you know, where the book is being sold and how it's set up. And then of course the traditional world, everything is just
lifetime.
It's just much slower, but in theory it's bigger. But in theory, right. Mm-hmm. And so it's like the payoffs are larger, but they're slower. And then the self-published thing, they're smaller, but they're more regular. And I think that might be a generalization. In fact, I know it is, but yeah, you know, in a year, 2 years, you know, who knows? I could be right back to doing it all myself. And, you know, there is no golden ticket and no sure thing in publishing at all. So, you
know. Well, I think we're kind of a mind, which is just like, look, this is my gig. I get right up in the morning. I go to work.
That's it.
Try to do the best work you can.
That's it. Yeah. And it's amazing. You know, I get really kind of like, I get a little intense with people, you know, especially in burgeoning writers, and people are asking me for advice. And it's like, look, stop being paralyzed by all this analysis. Just
get moving.
Get moving. Turn it into a hobby. And once it's a hobby, make it a habit. Once it's a habit, work at making it a career and don't backslide. I've backslid, you know, I've made it a career and then it went right back to being a hobby. Right. I mean, you got to be careful. It's tricky, but, you know, there's a lot of people who will think about it to the end of the day and they don't ever do it. And it's just, why would you do that to yourself?
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Well, man, like I say, pleased with your success.
Thanks.
Can't wait to watch it grow even further. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, no, this is a blast. Thank you for having me.
And I can't wait to see Chitter on the shelves.
Me too.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. This is The Outliners. So pleased to bring this to you. Thank you so much for listening, as I say, and we'll get back at you.